Good morning. Welcome to the Home Improvement Show. I'm still Dan Laxer in for Ken Connors. And Walter Assey of Renovco is with me in studio. Good morning to you, Walter.
Good morning.
I understand you just got back from vacation, and tomorrow you're going on vacation again.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Can I come? Correct.
You can definitely come.
Thank you,
definitely
very much.
Come. You also were on vacation. We were actually just talking about that. So you were,
yeah, absolutely. Correct. Absolutely. And I got the travel bug. I have to go somewhere else now.
You do.
I mean,
you
not
do.
Right now, but
I mean, today is a great day to leave. It's still dark out there.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's foggy. It's rainy. And actually, that's a question I would love to ask you. It's you know, where the temperature hasn't really been fluctuating that much, but it's unseasonably, I don't know if we can call
mild.
It warm or let's say mild.
Yeah.
And then later on in the week, it's going to get cold. How does this affect our houses, our homes?
I mean, in days like this, like or the last couple of days, we've seen a lot of melting snow on the roofs. That's a great day to stick your head in the attic and just walk around.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you will, if you are doing, if you have any type of leak, that will be the best time to have an early detection.
Yeah.
Is from the attic down. Because if you do find a place where it's actually leaking, you could maybe channel the water somehow, or you could put a bucket in the area if it's accessible. There's a lot you could do, and you can pinpoint to the roofer exactly where the leak is coming from once you're ready to repair it. That's it. I mean, this is what's happening right now as far as global warming is. It's really testing our houses to, to the maximum, in every aspect. Whether it's foundations and there's any cracks in the foundations. Before we would only worry about spring saw, but now we seem to have a lot of saws during the winter.
Yeah.
And then every time something like this happens, you have to be on alert. You have to have your eyes open and see if there's any discoloration in the material. And I'm not just talking in the roof. I'm talking or in the ceilings. I'm talking in the foundation, any particular place that could potentially have a water infiltration from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Another big thing that was happening this week, and we've seen a lot of it, is the gutter downspouts were frozen.
Yes.
And you had a big melting on the roof. So you would see that your gutters are overflowing. If you have access to your downspouts and you could unfreeze them to help evacuate that water, you know, that would be a good thing to do, because again, you are overloading the perimeter around your house when you have the gutters overflowing constantly with God knows how many inches of snow you have on your roof. So that's, you know, that's important to do. Right now we are in a good place as far as roof is concerned. Most of the snow have melted.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, if you have not had any type of damage whatsoever or any type of potential leak, you're in a good place. At least, you know, for the winter, you're going to be fine, because we've got tested already a couple of times.
Yes.
With the variation in the weather. We have to follow the weather patterns. I mean, this week or next week is going to be a lot of exodus to snowbirds, because they spend the winter here, the holidays. So it's really time to come and look around the house and see what you're going to do when you're going to leave for 2-3 months. Very important to mention. Because of what's happening right now, and because we can't trust the weather patterns, there are things that we have to maybe do as an additional security blanket, because we're not mm-hmm. going to be here if, let's say, you're in Florida for the winter. Number one would be, what do you do with the water? Like, do we shut it off? Do we keep it open? How do I winterize my home to ensure that when I'm not there, you know, if something happens, you know, I'm kind of covered. Yes, you're going to have your daughter or your son or your neighbor check in your house, but they're not going to be there 24/7.
Right.
So if you have an electric outage, typically that happens in a big storm, you're not going to have people that like you that much to leave their house in the middle of a storm and go check on yours. They're going to check on theirs first. So, you know, like what's happening with your sump pump in this case? What's happening to your furnace, to the heating, to the freezing, the pipes? So all of these things, you have to go through a checklist and kind of ensure that everything have a backup or a plan of some kind as well. Insurance is a big thing, right? Yes. Insurance is a big, big thing. If you're not home, you have to have someone check on your home every 48 hours and have to be logged in.
48 hours?
Yeah, you have to have it logged in. So twice a week is typically not sufficient because it's not 48 hours, right?
Right.
And if someone's going to go in, what's the proof? There have to be, for example, an alarm, entry list that shows people have armed and disarmed the alarm, all of these things. Because if, God forbid, you have a big damage, it's one thing the insurance companies are going to come and ask you. They're going to see a big, nice tan on your face. I'm going to tell you, were you on vacation? And, you know, if you were and you don't have a proper log of someone checking in and visiting the house, well, you know, most often than not, you're not going to be covered.
Yeah, that's a good point. Something I would not have thought of. 514-790-0800, Star Talk on Bell Mobility, and 1-800-491-CJD. Your calls and questions for the Home Improvement Show with Walter Assey of Renovco. I got a text in before the show started from Ian wanting me to ask you about water hammer. He has water hammer in both floors of his house when he flushes toilets and closes faucets. Do you have any advice that I can use for a solution before I call a plumber? Is water hammer, that's the loud banging in the pipes?
That's correct. Okay. Yeah. Water hammer arresters, if it's a bit handy, you could install it yourself. Mm-hmm. It's not expensive to buy either. So it's just a question of, you know, zeroing in where the problem is and installing a water hammer arrester, and that should solve the problem for him.
What does that do?
It kind of, because what happens is when you're going to, when you shut off the water, what happens is you have all that pressure that comes in. And if you have anything that is loose or anything that is in the valve itself that is not functioning properly, you have that banging noise.
Yeah.
So what that does is, it think of it as a hydraulic shock absorber. It just kind of absorbs the shock and prevent the pipes from shaking the way that you hear when you have, in a case of a water hammering.
Yeah.
So it's a little gadget. It works. It's not expensive. And it's, if, like I said, if you're a bit handy, you can install it in the device. Just a question of zeroing in to install it in the right device when, you know, you're installing it. You're not putting it somewhere else. But it actually works.
I lived in an older house that had hot water radiators. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, you'd have to, quote unquote, bleed them to solve the same problem. Is that how that thing works?
Well, I mean, it's not really bleeding. Because what happens is, like I said, in your case, I understand what you're saying. But, I mean, you could try to open all the faucets and flush, and that sometimes that happens. Sometimes the question of just changing your washer or what have you. But in case where you've done all of these things and that doesn't work, then the water hammer arrester is your last bet.
Okay. All right, there you go. I hope that helps, Ian. Thanks so much for the text. You can also call in to 514-790-0800, Star Talk on Bell Mobility, and 1-800-491-CJD. I see that Wayne from Laval called. You know what? Let's talk to Wayne right now. Hi there, Wayne.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. My question is, I replaced my 13-year-old wall-mounted air conditioner this summer and replaced it with a heat pump, mm-hmm. which I absolutely love. Mm-hmm. The question I have is, with the air conditioner, you would use it, it doesn't get that much use, to be honest with you, and you would seldom run it 24/7 for longer than 2 or 3 days. But now my heat pump, I'm leaving it on 24/7 for the last month, pretty much, and I'm just wondering if that's okay.
Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show with Dan Laxer in for Ken and Walter Assey of Renovco. And when you last joined us, we were on the phone with Wayne. So just a quick recap of your question, Wayne. What exactly is it you wanted to know? It was about your heat pump.
Well, when I had when it was just an air conditioner, it lasted 13 years, but we seldom used it. Like, you know, you wouldn't run it 24/7 for more than 3 or 4 days at a time, but right now I'm running my heat pump 24/7. I'm just wondering if that's okay to do all winter long.
Not only it's okay, Wayne, but it's actually encouraged. First of all, you're going to be saving lots of money on hydro because you're going to be on the lowest rate of hydro. Are you dual energy or you're not?
I'm not on dual energy. I have baseboards, but I check every day my hydro account, and I can see that I'm saving money.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, versus electric baseboards, and if you're using the heat pumps through duct systems, you're going to be saving money through that type of heating. Beside the fact that it's actually more healthy than just electric baseboards, because baseboards, what they do is they just heat up the air and they dry it up. Mm-hmm. Whereas, forced air is a better, healthier option, especially if you humidify in the house.
Now, my concern was, will I get 13 years out of it like the other one by using it so often?
You should get even more than that. Typically, the newer models, and yours should be that model, hopefully that's that model, they can work until minus 30. Mm. Okay. Which is awesome, and they are guaranteed, the good brands are guaranteed for 10 years labor and material, including the compressor.
Yes, mine is guaranteed 10 years, so, okay, I just wasn't sure whether using it so often year-round compared to the old one, if that was okay, but if you say it's good, then I'll just keep it on.
You have no worry whatsoever. What I need you to do, though, Wayne, is ensure that the maintenance is well taken care of. Changing the filters every 3 months is very highly recommended. Mm-hmm. Or, for example, every time you have a major renovation in your house or there's a lot of dust creation because there's big construction work on the street and the windows are open, anything that could cause the filters to clog up. These are the things that could affect the life of your heat pump. Other things that you know, if it's inadequately installed, meaning it's not to level, and then you see that the fan's starting to make noise. These are the telltale signs that there's something that's going wrong with your heat pump. If you see anything freezing up, any frozen coils, these are the things that you have to keep an eye on. And that's what will determine how long the heat pump lasts. Now, on the upside of all of this, whatever time you get out of it, you're getting in savings in parallel. So let's say instead of the 13 years that he's hoping for, it works 10 years. Well, he just got himself 10 years worth of savings, which would have offset any money he would have had to pay to fix it in 10 years, right, quote unquote. But typically, okay, a manufacturer that gives you 10 years worth of guarantee, Wayne, knows that his product is going to hopefully last more than 10 years because they don't want to be spending money on servicing that product.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because my air conditioner the year before when it started to give me trouble, it cost me $700 to have a condenser and cleaning, a condenser replaced, and it cleaned. So,
all right,
for sure, it's not really cheap to fix these things, and that's why the maintenance part is super important. You are saving every time you're using it, so that's the upside for you. And and these things are made to work for long hours. Specifically now, like we said, they kind of improved them, so they're made to work over minus 30. So now it's your furnace that will last forever because it will barely work.
There you go.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Good to talk to you, Wayne. Happy New Year. Thanks so much for the call. Bye-bye. We got a text in. By the way, our phone numbers are 514-790-0800, Star Talk on Bell Mobility, and 1-800-491-CJD. This is a question from Sue in Beaconsfield. We have a relatively new kitchen installed by a reputable design company. Within the first year, the lacquer seams started cracking. Can you offer any explanation as to why this would happen? Our home heating system is baseboard heaters with no air exchanger. Would this be the culprit? Mm-hmm. The cabinets are MDF based.
The MDF is usually better than wood. If you would have told me wood, when I say better, and I'm talking about the contraction and expansion
right.
due to different temperatures in the house or humidity levels. There's many things that it could be. Now, the fact that the house is very dry, when you tell me electric baseboards,
yeah.
that usually means you have dry air. Now, not only that's bad for the house as far as the movement of everything around, but it's also bad for your health. Mm-hmm. You know, we see more that, you know, when the house is dry, we're not, you know, we have sinuses, we have this, we have that. So it is a way for you, there is a way, I mean, it's our sinuses tell us a lot about what's in the house as well. And that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we find that, you know, we're not feeling well, we have scratchy skin or dry skin,
yes.
that means there's something that's definitely not right in the house. And that's time for you to humidify your house. You have to think of it as a system. You can't just let it do whatever it wants. You have to be the one controlling it. It shouldn't be the one controlling you. So make sure you have a hygrometer. Look at your humidity level in the house on a daily basis, because as you know, every day, especially now with the big swings we have in temperature, you could have a humid day, a dry day, a drier day. Usually in colder days, we could have very dry humidity. So you need to humidify. And that will help conserve a lot of what you have from doors,
mm-hmm.
because they do expand and contract. Sometimes you want to get them closing or opening, because depending, you know, and especially in the summer when it expands, you can't close the doors because
yes,
you are
exactly.
there's something that is not you're not doing adequately in the mechanical aspect of the home, whether you are dehumidifying or humidifying depending on the weather patterns. So that's one. The other thing that could have happened as well in her case in MDF is when they painted the MDF, okay, they could have applied the primer and not allowed the wood to rest enough time before applying the first two coats.
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay.
Okay.
And that sometimes happens because they're trying to rush the job out. And, you know, so obviously when we prime in a paint booth, any type of cabinetry, we like to allow it for a few days to rest before we apply the first and the second coat of the paint color.
Because that's a controlled environment.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And that will elongate the life of the paint job. So is it that? Is it this? I can't really tell you. But usually you could try. I mean, if you see that there's something that is happening in many different areas, not just in one area, that could be the case.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Regardless whether the electric baseboard is an issue, it's always an issue in the sense that it's a practical, cheap way to kind of heat up a house, but it's not a healthy way. You have to offset it with everything that we've talked about, including other things like their right. hardwood floors and your wood, your doors and your cabinets and your vanities and everything else that goes around that as well.
Okay, that's something okay. I'll have to look in for my place. All right, that's a text from Sue. We've got lots of texts popping in. And we've got Reginald waiting in Greenfield Park at 514-790-0800, star talk, star 8255, free call on Bell Mobility and 1-800-491-CJAD. It is the Home Improvement Show with me, Dan Laxer, in for Ken. At 834, sorry, 934, welcome back to the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800. Dan in for Ken Connors with Walter Assey over in Avco. We'll go out to Greenfield Park. Good morning, Reginald.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. How can we help you?
I have, I'm not sure, but I have a problem with my electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And it never happened before until lately that if I turn on one electrical system or the light...
Like a light switch?
Yeah, the light switch. Well, yeah. Not even a light switch. If I turn on
an appliance?
I'm confused now. The my kettle or my space, the heater or anything like that, or the light over my stove, the rest of the lights in the house dips. It gets like dull. And then if I want my microwave, suddenly if I use my microwave, I have to turn off like the lights in the house that before it works properly. It would not warm up, but if it's off, it will work. And I don't know if it's what is happening. When I put on the space heater downstairs, the light in the ceiling gets like brighter. Then if I turn it off, it fades again.
Okay. Yeah, could that be a problem of electrical panel not being up to code?
Not long ago, like a month now, and I'm kind of concerned. I don't know what to do, and I don't want my house.
So let's let Walter answer your question.
Reginald, first of all, do you know how much amperage you have in your panel? Like, is it 100 amp, 200 amp?
200.
Sorry?
200 amps.
You have 200. And how old is your panel?
It's about 5 years.
Okay, so the panel is fairly new.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know the brand of the panel that you have?
No, I don't.
Okay. So what might be happening, and again, we're not mass electricians, but I encourage you very strongly that you should call one and check it out. What could be happening specifically in the kitchen area is you don't have your appliances on dedicated circuits. Okay.
Yeah.
And that is a problem for many reasons. But I mean, by code, especially in the kitchen, every appliance or every plug have to have its own dedicated circuit. So if you have a microwave, it can be connected to something else. So when you're using the microwave and you have other things connected to that, you are, overloading your breaker and so on and so forth. So a good mass electrician can come and determine that and see where your amperage is overloaded. Or do you have, too many switches on the same breaker? Do you have too many different things happening in the same time? So, you light up a switch and then, it's connected to your TV, a plug, and this plug and the other plug. And that is, a definite no-no if you are overloading your breakers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a long time ago, when I came here, I'm here like about 12 something years now, that I had just the fuses, and one electrician came in to do something, and he told me that too many stuff is on one system.
There you go.
He changed it up a little. At the time, it was about 15 years ago, and I never had no particular problem until, plus I have a heat pump, and my heat pump kind of was working all the time until the thermostat just went dull. But like all of a sudden, this is happening. It never happened for all this time until about 1 month ago.
Yeah, but I mean, here's the thing, Reginald, and we always have that. That's very common that people would say that. But what we don't realize is sometimes in those 5 years we've added a charger for the laptop on this plug, and we bought a new TV for that room, and we added things without us subconsciously realizing that, oh my God, that's true that I have three more things plugged on the circuit or and so on and so forth. Now,
that's true.
When electricians come and do these things, like you said, they come and they correct few things around what they could correct, but sometimes it gets a bit more intrusive because they have to fish in new wires, and not everybody have the stomach or the appetite to do that. Now that your house or your panel is talking to you and telling you, okay, you have this problem here in that room and you have that problem in that room, what I would do is I would kind of lug it in a bit more in detail, saying if I put the microwave, this happens. If I do this, that happens. So when the electrician comes, he doesn't have to spend hours and hours and hours looking at every breaker, but you could kind of direct him where the problems are, and then he will start separating those circuits accordingly.
Sounds like a good idea. I'll do that, sir.
There you go. Thanks so much for the call, Reginald. Have a happy New Year.
Thank you very much, too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Out to Hudson now. This is Jeff. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I love your show.
Thank you.
I have a question for Walter. I own a revenue property in the southwest region of Montreal. It's a triplex. And I've gone through like Renault Climat because I'd like to switch to a dual energy system. Presently, it's heated by natural gas with forced air. There are air conduits on like every apartment that have been there for a long time. The issue is that the gas furnaces are kind of at the end of their life cycle. They're about 20 years old. So what I was advised is to change the gas furnace and then to add a heat pump for each unit.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you'd recommend in terms of energy efficiency, like to get the DT rate from hydro and also, you know, the best possible situation for the tenants who are paying for the heating and electricity?
100%. A heat pump will save you money. On the long run, will save your tenants money in this case, and happy tenant means a tenant that could potentially stay longer. So for sure, adding a heat pump will make you eligible for the better heating rate for hydro, and will give you the opportunity to have air conditioning as well. So you could have provide them with both services at the same time. Be very careful. So there are many brands in the market right now. And what you want to do is you want to get the brands with, number one, the longest warranty. And number two, to the highest amount that the brand will work on as far as heating, which is, I think, the maximum we have right now is minus 30. There are still heat pumps out there that only work until minus 14. But, you know, you pay a little bit more and you get the better quality one. That's a much better option for you. Much better option. Look, not just for the heat component, but also for the air conditioning one at the same time.
Yeah. Well, if I stick with well-known brands like Lennox or Carrier, I should be all right as far as with the warranties and the...
Not necessarily. I mean, look, there are variety in the marketplace right now. And again, like Lennox, the reason we have different models is because they don't need to have a minus 30 heat pump in Texas, for example, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So just make sure that where the model that you're buying in that particular brand gives you all of these things and goes through that checklist. The last time I've actually checked on this, surprisingly enough, I've seen brands that maybe, I don't want to call them no-name brands, but less known brands that had more options on the heat pumps that I was looking for this particular project, right? So that's why I'm saying, look at their guarantees. Some of them still offer only 5 years warranty on compressors, but a lot of them are offering 10. There are some that are offering 7. So obviously, that's where what's going to really lead you to make the decision.
Right. Well, the question also is, at this point in time, is it prudent to change a natural gas furnace for a new one, considering some of the restrictions that Montreal might be bringing in as far as gas furnaces are concerned?
There no way near where the restrictions are going to be on oil. There are going to be certain restrictions, but all the good news is that all the newer models are usually fitting these restrictions. They have to be more energy efficient, and that's what, they kind of, the industry follows what the Kyoto agreements are and what the energy saving things are. So it's, everything is working in parallel, really. And the government is aware of that. You can't have something that's so drastically different than what's being produced, because millions and billions of dollars are going to be lost through that production process. Mm-hmm. If you say, okay, well, this particular furnace model is obsolete now, or in 2 years I'm gonna, so everything that usually is being sold today, it's because it will fit within a certain criteria for many more years to come.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, I don't know in 10 years if they're going to come and introduce things, but they always introduce things with a newer, with grace period to go with it. So you'll be fine. And again, in gas, I'm not as worried. In oil, I'm obviously a lot more worried because, mm-hmm. you know, you can't buy new oil furnaces as of 2023, I believe.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, in your case, what you need to do first and foremost is just ensure that the brands, number one, if you have a brand in mind, it doesn't mean that the guy that is your installer going to be able to provide you with that plan, because every installer have a distribution right for a certain brand and a certain banner. And he will, you know, if he does Lennox, well, he's going to try to push Lennox on you. But if you think Carrier is a better fit for you, well, you might have to switch installers in order to get a Carrier distributor. That's where it gets to be tricky and dicey. You know, you've done your research, you're happy with what you've read, and then someone else tells you, oh, don't take this, take that instead. Don't let that be the driving force. You make the decision, you hold the captain's seat, and you say, this is what is right for me. And then you find the installer that distributes that banner, that particular banner. In our case, like I told you, the project that we've researched, I've had to go through 7 different installers to find one that had that particular brand, because it did have options that was on the architecture specifications drawn by the condo board for noise and so on and so forth. But I had to go through 7 different companies to find one that actually distributes that particular brand.
Right. All right. I hope that helps. Happy New Year, Jeff. Thanks so much for the call.
Happy New Year.
Cheers. Our remaining moments on the Home Improvement Show here on CJAD 800. Let's go back to the phones. Another caller from Greenfield Park. Good morning, Isabella.
Hi. I'm calling to find out from this fellow. I have a two-story house. How much would it cost, really, to put in heat pumps?
Okay, so do you have the ducting system?
No, I don't have this system.
Do you have any ducts? How do you heat right now?
Right now, I heat with oil and electricity.
Okay, but so you do have a ducting system.
I have energy system.
Okay, so you have air vents, right? You have forced air.
No, I have the old radiators.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Okay. So the pump itself as a unit is not that expensive. You can, and depending on the size, anywhere between $3,000 to $6,000.
Oh, $3,000 to $6,000! And the fellow came here and told me $55,000 to put in the heat pumps into the house here.
Okay, so again, let's just backtrack 2 seconds. That where you might be looking at him adding the ducting system, which was the second part of my answer to you. If you don't,
he wasn't going to change the ducts at all. He was just going to put in the system and use. I use the same radiators.
Okay, so I mean, $55,000 is a lot of money.
Yeah.
That I would definitely have someone else check it out for you and get other quotations, because that doesn't make sense at all.
My daughter saved me a lot of money because she's the one. Came and told me that this man is conning me.
I don't have the details of the quotation, but if it's just a home a heat pump, then I would definitely look twice at it and see, you know, and get other quotations. Obviously, you always want to compare apples with apples.
Yeah.
But it looks like a lot of money you're spending on that.
That's what it sounds
okay,
like.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much for the call, Isabella. Happy New Year to you. Let's see if we can squeeze in a couple of texts here. A lot of people have heat pump questions. Here's one. Here's from Ajay. He asks, what's the best option when replacing a thermopump where the installation is through the attic?
It's not to do it through the attic.
Ah. Okay.
I mean, attic installation is probably the worst idea in our temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are putting a system... That is in the hottest possible place in the summer when you need the cooling, and the coldest possible place in the winter when you need the heat.
Right.
So, you know, unless you guarantee for me that you're doing this immaculate insulation, which more often than not, 9 out of 10 times I go up and I see these types of insulations, they're not adequately insulated. Mm-hmm. And they are causing condensation issues and so on and so forth. The other thing which I really don't like is that the fact they're in a confined space that is not accessible to you.
Mm-hmm.
So fair changing enough. Filters becomes a chore.
Yeah.
You know, really, how many times do you like to go up to a new attic and just walk around 3 months, 4 or 5 times a year just to go and, you know, change a filter? Especially if you have these confined, low ceiling attics where you have all kind of nails protruding out and you keep on knocking your head with it. And especially if you don't have hair, it gets to be a bit more dicey. So it's really not a great installation.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not made for our temperature. If you are doing a complete overhaul and you can change that, please be my guest. If you cannot, just ensure that whoever does this installation, you know, that you have a guarantee of some type of an adequate insulation around the ducting so it does not do condensation and you don't have that heat loss or that cool loss in the summer that will add to your electric and heating bill and the efficiency of the system itself.
Okay.
Again, it's plus the location of your furnace is important. Accessible, so meaning in an attic you have a highest point or lowest point. Try to have it as much as you can in the highest point,
mm-hmm.
so at least you can get to it easily without having to bend over or to go down on your knees to get to it and what have you. Because I mean, there is a risk for you and your health. You fall, you trip, you go through the ceiling. You want to be as comfortable as possible if you absolutely need to have it there.
If you have it, yeah.
The other positive when you do it in the center, which is usually the highest, is the distribution gets to be equal from both sides. It's not on one side that the pressure on the other side of the house becomes lower. So it's not really what's most convenient for the installer. It's really what's the most convenient for you. Do not let the installer dictate it because it's easier for him. He have to run less lines. Always think, okay, the next step ahead. If I'm gonna go in 4 times a year, you know, how much height clearance do I have? And do have that conversation with the installer.
I think the lesson we learned today is you have to make sure what you're installing in your home, because there were a lot of questions about heat pumps and stuff like that. Make sure it's right for your house. Make sure it's right for you and get a second opinion.
Always.
Yeah. Okay. Walter, it's been great to have you on the show.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Happy New Year.
And the very best same to you.
Thank you.
Joy, health, and happiness.